abused version of his geyser buddy. His mud skin was cracked like a parched riverbed. His face was withered, as if every bit of moisture had been squeezed out of him. Looking at the damage Nero had done to him, I added a few more items to a mental list I was preparing. Ways to torture an emperor in the fields of punishment.
"You saved me," Polly said with amazement. "Bring it in!"
He threw his arms around me. His power was so diminished that his body heat did not kill me, but it did open up my sinuses quite well. "You should get home," I said. "Pete is worried, and you need to regain your strength."
"Ah, man."
Polly wiped a steaming tear from his face.
"Yeah, I'm gone. But anything you ever need, a free steam cleaning, some PR work, a mud scrub, you name it."
As he dissolved into mist, I called after him.
"And Polly, I'd give the woods at Camp Half-Blood a 10 for customer satisfaction."
Polly beamed with gratitude. He tried to hug me again, but he was already 90% steam. All I got was a humid waft of mud-scented air. Then he was gone. The 5 demigods gathered around me. Miranda looked past me at the Grove of Dodona. Her eyes were still puffy from crying, but she had beautiful irises the color of new foliage.
"So the voices I heard from that grove, it's really an oracle? Those trees can give us prophecies?"
I shivered, thinking of the oak tree's limerick. "Perhaps."
"Can I see?"
"No," I said. "Not until we understand the place better." I had already lost one daughter of Demeter today. I didn't intend to lose another.
"I don't get it," Ellis grumbled. "You're Apollo? Like, the Apollo?"
"I'm afraid so. It's a long story."
"Oh, gods."
Kayla scanned the clearing.
"I thought I heard Meg's voice earlier. Did I dream that? Was she with you? Is she okay?"
The others looked at me for an explanation. Their expressions were so fragile and tentative, I decided I couldn't break down in front of them.
"She's alive," I managed. "She had to leave."
"What?"
Kayla asked.
"Why?"
"Nero," I said. She went after Nero."
"Hold up." Austin raised his fingers like goalposts. "When you say Nero..."
I did my best to explain how the Mad Emperor had captured them. They deserved to know. As I recounted the story, Nero's words kept replaying in my mind.
"My wrecking crew will be here any minute. Once Camp Half-Blood is destroyed, I'll make it my new front lawn."
I wanted to think this was just bluster. Nero had always loved threats and grandiose statements. Unlike me, he was a terrible poet. He used flowery language like, well, like every sentence was a pungent bouquet of metaphors. "Oh, that's another good one." Jotting that down. Why had he kept checking his watch? And what wrecking crew could he have been talking about? I had a flashback to my dream of the sunbus careening toward a giant bronze face. I felt like I was free-falling again. Nero's plan became horribly clear. After dividing the few demigods defending the camp, he had meant to burn this grove, but that was only part of his attack.
"Oh, gods," I said. "The Colossus."
The 5 demigods shifted uneasily.
"What Colossus?"
Kayla asked.
"You mean the Colossus of Rhodes?"
"No," I said. "The Colossus Neronus." Cecil scratched his head.
"The Colossus Neurotic?"
Ellis Wakefield snorted.
"You're a Colossus Neurotic, Markowitz. Apollo's talking about the big replica of Nero that stood outside the amphitheater in Rome, right?"
"I'm afraid so,"
I said. While we're standing here, Nero is going to try to destroy Camp Half-Blood, and the Colossus will be his wrecking crew. Miranda flinched. You mean a giant statue is about to stomp on camp? I thought the Colossus was destroyed centuries ago.
Ellis frowned. Supposedly, so was the Athena Parthenos. Now it's sitting on top of Half-Blood Hill.
The other's expressions turned grim. When a child of Ares makes a valid point, you know the situation is serious.
Speaking of Athena,
Austin picked some incendiary fluff off his shoulder.
Won't the statue protect us? I mean, that's what she's there for, right?
She will try, I guessed. But you must understand, the Athena Parthenos draws her power from her followers. The more demigods under her care, the more formidable her magic. And right now,
the camp is practically empty,
Miranda finished.
Not only that, I said, but the Athena Parthenos is roughly 40 feet tall.
If memory serves, Nero's Colossus was more than twice that.
Ellis grunted. So they're not in the same weight class? It's an uneven match.
Cecil Markowitz stood a little straighter.
Guys, did you feel that?
I thought he might be playing one of his Hermes pranks. Then the ground shook again, ever so slightly. From somewhere in the distance came a rumbling sound, like a battleship scraping over a sandbar.
Please tell me that was thunder,
Kayla said.
Ellis cocked his head, listening. It's a war machine. A big automaton wading ashore about half a click from here. We need to get to camp right now.
No one argued with Ellis's assessment. I suppose he could distinguish between the sounds of war machines, the same way I could pick out an off-tune violin in a Rachmaninoff symphony. To their credit, the demigods rose to the challenge. Despite the fact that they'd been recently bound, doused in flammable substances, and staked like human tiki torches, they closed ranks and faced me with determination in their eyes.
How do we get out of here? Austin asked. The Mimika's lair?
I felt suddenly suffocated, partly because I had five people looking at me as if I knew what to do. I didn't. In fact, if you want to know a secret, we gods usually don't. When confronted for answers, we usually say something Rhea-like. You will have to find out for yourself, or true wisdom must be earned. But I didn't think that would fly in this situation. Also, I had no desire to plunge back into the ant's nest. Even if we made it through alive, it would take much too long. Then we would have to run perhaps half the length of the forest. I stared at the vint-shaped hole in the canopy. I don't suppose any of you can fly. They shook their heads.
I can cook, Cecil offered.
Ellis smacked him on the shoulder. I looked back at the Mimika's tunnel. The solution came to me like a voice whispering in my ear. You know someone who can fly, stupid. It was a risky idea. Then again, rushing off to fight a giant automaton was also not the safest plan of action. I think there's a way, I said. But I'll need your help. Austin balled his fists.
Anything you need. We're ready to fight.
Actually, I don't need you to fight. I need you to lay down a beat. My next important discovery. Children of Hermes cannot rap. At all. Bless his conniving little heart, Cecil Markowitz tried his best, but he kept throwing off my rhythm section with his spastic clapping and terrible air mic noises. After a few trial runs, I demoted him to dancer. His job would be to shimmy back and forth and wave his hands, which he did with the enthusiasm of a tent revival preacher. The others managed to keep up. They still looked like half-plucked, highly combustible chickens, but they bopped with the proper amount of soul. I launched into Mama, my throat reinforced with water and cough drops from Kayla's belt pack. Ingenious girl. Who brings cough drops on a three-legged death race? I sang directly into the mouth of the Myrmica's tunnel, trusting the acoustics to carry my message. We did not have to wait long. The earth began to rumble beneath our feet. I kept singing. I had warned my comrades not to stop laying down the righteous beat until the song was over. Still, I almost lost it when the ground exploded. I had been watching the tunnel, but Mama did not use tunnels. She exited wherever she wanted. In this case, straight out of the earth, 20 yards away, spraying dirt, grass, and small boulders in all directions. She scuttled forward, mandibles clacking, wings buzzing, dark Teflon eyes focused on me. Her abdomen was no longer swollen, so I assumed she had finished depositing her most recent batch of killer ant larvae. I hoped this meant she would be in a good mood, not a hungry mood. Behind her, 2 winged soldiers clambered out of the earth. I had not been expecting bonus ants. Really, bonus ants is not a term most people would like to hear.
They flanked the queen, their antennae quivering.
I finished my ode, then dropped to one knee, spreading my arms as I had before. "Mama," I said, "we need a ride." My logic was this. Mothers were used to giving rides. With thousands upon thousands of offspring, I assumed the queen ant would be the ultimate soccer mom. And indeed, Mama grabbed me with her mandibles and tossed me over her head. Despite what the demigods may tell you, I did not flail, scream, or land in a way that damaged my sensitive parts. I landed heroically, straddling the queen's neck, which was no larger than the back of an average warhorse. I shouted to my comrades, "Join me! It's perfectly safe!" For some reason, they hesitated. The ants did not. The queen tossed Kayla just behind me. The soldier ants followed Mama's lead, snapping up 2 demigods each and throwing them aboard. The 3 Myrmicas revved their wings with a noise like radiator fan blades. Kayla grabbed my waist. "Is this really safe?" she yelled. "Perfectly." I hoped I was right. Perhaps even safer than the Sun Chariot. Didn't the Sun Chariot almost destroy the world once? Well, twice, I said. 3 times, if you count the day I let Thalia Grace drive, but forget I asked. Mama launched herself into the sky. The canopy of twisted branches blocked our path, but Mama didn't pay any more attention to them than she had to the ton of solid earth she'd plowed through. I yelled, "Duck!" We flattened ourselves against Mama's armored head as she smashed through the trees, leaving 1,000 wooden splinters embedded in my back. It felt so good to fly again, I didn't care. We soared above the woods and banked to the east. For 2 or 3 seconds, I was exhilarated. Then I heard the screaming from Camp Half-Blood. Chapter 35. Buck-Naked Statue. A Neurotic Colossus. Where art thy undies? Even my supernatural powers of description fail me. Imagine seeing yourself as 100-foot-tall bronze statue, a replica of your own magnificence gleaming in the late afternoon light. Now imagine that this ridiculously handsome statue is wading out of Long Island Sound onto the North Shore. In his hand is a ship's rudder, the blade the size of a stealth bomber, fixed to a 50-foot-long pole, and Mr. Gorgeous is raising said rudder to smash the crud out of Camp Half-Blood. This was the sight that greeted us as we flew in from the woods.
"How is that thing alive?" Kayla demanded. "What did Nero do? Order it online?"
"The Triumvirate has vast resources," I told her. "They've had centuries to prepare. Once they reconstructed the statue, all they had to do was fill it with some animating magic, usually the harnessed life forces of wind or water spirits. I'm not sure. That's really more of Hephaestus's specialty."
"So how do we kill it?"
I'm working on that.
All across the valley, campers screamed and ran for their weapons. Nico and Will were floundering in the lake, apparently having been capsized in the middle of a canoe ride. Chiron galloped through the dunes, harrying the Colossus with his arrows. Even by my standards, Chiron was a very fine archer. He targeted the statue's joints and seams, yet his shots did not seem to bother the automaton at all. Already dozens of missiles stuck from the Colossus's armpits and neck like unruly hair.
"More quivers!" Chiron shouted. "Quickly!"
Rachel Dare stumbled from the armory, carrying half a dozen, and she ran to resupply him. The Colossus brought down his rudder to smash the dining pavilion, but his blade bounced off the camp's magical barrier, sparking as if it had hit solid metal. Mr. Gorgeous took another step inland, but the barrier resisted him, pushing him back with the force of a wind tunnel. On Half-Blood Hill, a silver aura surrounded the Athena Parthenos. I wasn't sure the demigods could see it, but every so often a beam of ultraviolet light shot from Athena's helmet like a search lamp, hitting the Colossus's chest and pushing back the invader. Next to her in the tall pine tree, the golden fleece blazed with fiery energy. The dragon Peleus hissed and paced around the trunk, ready to defend his turf. These were powerful forces, but I did not need godly sight to tell me that they would soon fail. The camp's defensive barriers were designed to turn away the occasional stray monster, to confuse mortals and prevent them from detecting the valley, and to provide a first line of defense against invading forces. A criminally beautiful 100-foot-tall celestial bronze giant was another thing entirely. Soon the Colossus would break through and destroy everything in its path.
"Apollo!"
Kayla nudged me in the ribs.
"What do we do?"
I stirred, again with the unpleasant realization that I was expected to have answers. My first instinct was to order a seasoned demigod to take charge. Wasn't it the weekend yet? Where was Percy Jackson? Were those Roman praetors, Frank Zhang, and Reyna Ramirez Arellano? Yes, they would have done nicely. My second instinct was to turn to Meg McCaffrey. How quickly I had grown used to her annoying yet strangely endearing presence. Alas, she was gone. Her absence felt like a Colossus stomping upon my heart. This was an easy metaphor to summon, since the Colossus was presently stomping on a great many things. Flanking us on either side, the soldier ants flew in formation, awaiting the Queen's orders. The demigods watched me anxiously, random bits of bandage fluff swirling from their bodies as we sped through the air. I leaned forward and spoke to Mama in a soothing tone. "I know I cannot ask you to risk your life for us." Mama hummed as if to say, "You're darn right." "Just give us one pass around that statue's head," I asked. "Enough to distract it. Then set us down on the beach." She clicked her mandibles doubtfully. "You're the best mama in the whole world," I added. "And you look lovely today." That line always worked with Leto. It did the trick with Mama Ant, too.
She twitched her antennae, perhaps sending a high-frequency signal to her soldiers, and all three ants banked hard to the right.
Below us, more campers joined the battle. Sherman Yang had harnessed two Pegasi to a chariot and was now circling the statue's legs, while Julia and Alice threw electric javelins at the Colossus's knees. The missiles stuck in his joints, discharging tendrils of blue lightning, but the statue barely seemed to notice. Meanwhile, at his feet, Connor Stoll and Harley used twin flamethrowers to give the Colossus a molten pedicure, while the Nike twins manned a catapult, lobbing boulders at the Colossus's celestial bronze crotch. Malcolm Pace, a true child of Athena, was coordinating the attacks from a hastily organized command post on the green. He and Nyssa had spread war maps across a card table and were shouting targeting coordinates, while Kiara, Damien, Paolo, and Billy rushed to set up ballistae around the communal hearth. Malcolm looked like the perfect battlefield commander, except for the fact that he'd forgotten his pants. His red briefs made quite a statement with his sword and leather cuirass. Mama dove toward the Colossus, leaving my stomach at a higher altitude. I had a moment to appreciate the statue's regal features. Its metal brow rimmed with a spiky crown meant to represent the beams of the sun. The Colossus was supposed to be Nero as the sun god, but the Emperor had wisely made the face resemble mine more closely than his. Only the line of its nose and its ghastly neckbeard suggested Nero's trademark ugliness. Also, did I mention that the 100-foot statue was entirely nude? Well, of course it was. Gods are almost always depicted as nude, because we are flawless beings. Why would you cover up perfection? Still, it was a little disconcerting to see my buck-naked self stomping around, slamming a ship's rudder at Camp Half-Blood. As we approached the Colossus, I bellowed loudly, "Imposter! I am the real Apollo! You're ugly!" Oh, dear reader, it was hard to yell such words at my own handsome visage, but I did. Such was my courage. The Colossus did not like being insulted. As Mama and her soldiers veered away, the statue swung its rudder upward. Have you ever collided with a bomber? I had a sudden flashback to Dresden in 1945, when the planes were so thick in the air, I literally could not find a safe lane to drive in. The axle on the Sun Chariot was out of alignment for weeks after that. I realized the ants were not fast enough flyers to escape the rudder's reach. I saw catastrophe approaching in slow motion. At the last possible moment, I yelled, "Dive!" We plunged straight down. The rudder only clipped the ants' wings, but it was enough to send us spiraling toward the beach. I was grateful for soft sand. I ate quite a bit of it when we crash-landed. By sheer luck, none of us died, though Kayla and Austin had to pull me to my feet. "Are you okay?" Austin asked. "Fine," I said. "We must hurry." The Colossus stared down at us, perhaps trying to discern whether we were dying in agony yet or needed some additional pain. I had wanted to get his attention, and I had succeeded. Huzzah! I glanced at Mama and her soldiers, who were shaking the sand off their carapaces. "Thank you. Now save yourselves. Fly!" They did not need to be told twice. I suppose ants have a natural fear of large humanoids looming over them, about to squash them with a heavy foot. Mama and her guards buzzed into the sky. Miranda looked after them. "I never thought I'd say this about bugs, but I'm going to miss those guys." "Hey!" called Nico D'Angelo. He and Will scrambled over the dunes, still dripping from their swim in the canoe lake. "What's the plan?" Will seemed calm, but I knew him well enough by now to tell that inside he was as charged as a bare electrical wire. Boom! The statue strode toward us. One more step, and it would be on top of us.
"Isn't there a control valve on its ankle?" Ellis asked. "If we can open it."
"No," I said.
"You're thinking of Talos. This is not Talos."
Nico brushed his dark, wet hair from his forehead.
"Then what?"
I had a lovely view of the Colossus's nose. Its nostrils were sealed with bronze. I suppose because Nero hadn't wanted his detractors trying to shoot arrows into his imperial noggin. I yelped. Kayla grabbed my arm.
"Apollo, what's wrong?"
"Arrows into the Colossus's head."
Oh, gods. I had an idea that would never, ever work.
However, it seemed better than our other option, which was to be crushed under a 2-ton bronze foot.
"Will, Kayla, Austin," I said. "Come with me."
"And Nico," said Nico.
"I have a doctor's note."
"Fine," I said. "Ellis, Cecil, Miranda, do whatever you can to keep the Colossus's attention."
The shadow of an enormous foot darkened the sand.
Now! I yelled. Scatter!
Chapter 36. I love me some plague, when it's on the right arrow.
Kabam!
You dead, bro?
Scattering was the easy part. They did that very well. Miranda, Cecil, and Ellis ran in different directions, screaming insults at the Colossus and waving their arms. This bought the rest of us a few seconds as we sprinted for the dunes, but I suspected the Colossus would soon enough come after me. I was, after all, the most important and attractive target. I pointed toward Sherman Yang's chariot, which was still circling the statue's legs in a vain attempt to electrocute its kneecaps.
We need to commandeer that chariot!
How?
Kayla asked. I was about to admit I had no idea when Nico D'Angelo grabbed Will's hand and stepped into my shadow. Both boys evaporated. I had forgotten about the power of shadow traveling, the way children of the underworld could step into one shadow and appear from another, sometimes hundreds of miles away. Hades used to love sneaking up on me that way and yelling,
Hi!
Just as I shot an arrow of death. He found it amusing if I missed my target and accidentally wiped out the wrong city. Austin shuddered. I hate it when Nico disappears like that. What's our plan?
You two are my backup, I said.
If I miss, if I die, it will be up to you.
Whoa, whoa,
Kayla said.
What do you mean, if you miss?
I drew my last arrow, the one I'd found in the grove. I'm going to shoot that gorgeous gargantuan in the ear. Austin and Kayla exchanged looks, perhaps wondering if I'd finally cracked under the strain of being mortal.
A plague arrow, I explained.
I'm going to enchant an arrow with sickness, then shoot it into the statue's ear. Its head is hollow. The ears are the only openings. The arrow should release enough disease to kill the Colossus's animating power, or at least to disable it.
How do you know it will work? Kayla asked.
I don't, but... Our conversation was ruined by a sudden heavy downpour of Colossus foot. We darted inland, barely avoiding being flattened. Behind us, Miranda shouted,
Hey, ugly!
I knew she wasn't talking to me, but I glanced back anyway. She raised her arms, causing ropes of seagrass to spring from the dunes and wrap around the statue's ankles. The Colossus broke through them easily, but they annoyed him enough to be a distraction. Watching Miranda face the statue made me heartsick for Meg all over again. Meanwhile, Ellis and Cecil stood on either side of the Colossus, throwing rocks at his shins. From the camp, a volley of flaming ballista projectiles exploded against Mr. Gorgeous's naked backside, which made me clench in sympathy.
You were saying? Austin asked.
Right. I twirled the arrow between my fingers. I know what you're thinking. I don't have godly powers. It's doubtful I'll be able to cook up the Black Death or the Spanish Flu, but still, if I can make the shot from close range, straight into its head, I might be able to do some damage.
And if you fail?
Kayla asked. I noticed her quiver was also empty. I won't have the strength to try twice. You'll have to make another pass. Find an arrow, try to summon some sickness. Make the shot while Austin holds the chariot steady. I realized this was an impossible request, but they accepted it with grim silence. I wasn't sure whether to feel grateful or guilty. Back when I was a god, I would have taken it for granted that mortals had faith in me. Now, I was asking my children to risk their lives again, and I was not at all sure my plan would work. I caught a flash of movement in the sky. This time, instead of a Colossus foot, it was Sherman Yang's chariot, minus Sherman Yang. Will brought the Pegasi in for a landing and dragged out a half-conscious Nico D'Angelo.
Where are the others? Kayla asked. Sherman and the Hermes girls.
Will rolled his eyes. Nico convinced them to disembark.
As if on cue, I heard Sherman screaming from somewhere far in the distance.
I'll get you, D'Angelo!
You guys go, Will told me. The chariot is only designed for three. And after that shadow travel, Nico's going to pass out any second.
No, I'm not, Nico complained.
Then passed out. Will caught him in a fireman's carry and took him away.
Good luck. I'm going to get the Lord of Darkness here some Gatorade.
Austin hopped in first and took the reins. As soon as Kayla and I were aboard, we shot skyward, the Pegasi swerving and banking around the Colossus with expert skill. I began to feel a glimmer of hope. We might be able to outmaneuver this giant hunk of good-looking bronze. Now, I said, if I can just enchant this arrow with a nice plague. The arrow shuddered from its fletching to its point.
Thou shalt not, it told me.
I try to avoid weapons that talk. I find them rude and distracting. Once, Artemis had a bow that could cuss like a Phoenician sailor. Another time, in a Stockholm tavern, I met this god who was smoking hot, except his talking sword just would not shut up. But I digress. I asked the obvious question. Did you just speak to me? The arrow quivered. Oh, dear. That was a horrible pun. My apologies.
Yea, verily. Prithee, shooting is not my purpose.
His voice was definitely male, sonorous and grave, like a bad Shakespearean actor's. But you're an arrow, I said. Shooting you is the whole point.
Ah, I really must watch those puns.
Guys, hang on! Austin shouted. The chariot plunged to avoid the Colossus's swinging rudder. Without Austin's warning, I would have been left in midair still arguing with my projectile.
So you're made from Dodona Oak, I guessed. Is that why you talk?
Forsooth, said the arrow.
Apollo, Kayla said. I'm not sure why you're talking to that arrow, but... From our right came a reverberating whang, like a snapped power line hitting a metal roof. In a flash of silver light, the camp's magical barriers collapsed. The Colossus lurched forward and brought his foot down on the dining pavilion, smashing it to rubble like so many children's blocks.
But that just happened, Kayla said with a sigh.
The Colossus raised his rudder in triumph. He marched inland, ignoring the campers who were running around his feet. Valentina Diaz launched a ballista missile into his groin. Again, I had to wince in sympathy. Harley and Connor Stoll kept blowtorching his feet, to no effect. Nyssa, Malcolm, and Chiron hastily ran a trip line of steel cable across the statue's path, but they would never have time to anchor it properly. I turned to Kayla.
You can't hear this arrow talking?
Judging from her wide eyes, I guess the answer was... No, and does hallucinating run in the family? Never mind. I looked at the arrow. What would you suggest, O wise missile of Dodona? My quiver is empty. The arrow's point dipped toward the statue's left arm.
Lo, the armpit doth hold the arrows thou needest.
Kayla yelled.
Colossus is heading for the cabins.
Armpit, I told Austin.
Fly for the armpit!
That wasn't an order one heard much in combat, but Austin spurred the Pegasi into a steep ascent. We buzzed the forest of arrows sticking out of the Colossus's arm seam, but I completely overestimated my mortal hand-eye coordination. I lunged for the shafts and came up empty. Kayla was more agile. She snagged a fistful but screamed when she yanked them free. I pulled her to safety. Her hand was bleeding badly, cut from the high-speed grab.
I'm fine,
Kayla yelped. Her fingers were clenched, splattering drops of red all over the chariot's floor.
Take the arrows.
I did. I tugged the Brazilian flag bandana from around my neck and gave it to her. Bind your hand, I ordered. There's some ambrosia in my coat pocket.
Don't worry about me.
Kayla's face was as green as her hair.
Make the shot. Hurry!
I inspected the arrows. My heart sank. Only one of the missiles was unbroken, and its shaft was warped. It would be almost impossible to shoot. I looked again at the talking arrow.
Thou shalt not thinkest about it, he intoned. Enchant thou the warped arrow.
I tried. I opened my mouth, but the proper words of enchantment were gone from my mind. As I feared, Lester Papadopoulos simply did not possess the power.
I can't.
I shall desist, promised the arrow of Dodona. Startest thou, plaguey, plaguey, plaguey.
The enchantment does not start, plaguey, plaguey, plaguey.
Who are you talking to? Austin demanded.
My arrow. I need more time.
We don't have more time. Kayla pointed with her wrapped bloody hand. The Colossus was only a few steps away from the central green. I wasn't sure the demigods even realized how much danger they were in. The Colossus could do much more than just flatten buildings. If he destroyed the central hearth, the sacred shrine of Hestia, he would extinguish the very soul of the camp. The valley would be cursed and uninhabitable for generations. Camp Halfblood would cease to exist. I realized I had failed. My plan would take much too long. If I could even remember how to make a plague arrow. This was my punishment for breaking an oath on the River Styx. Then, from somewhere above us, a voice yelled,
Hey, Bronze Butt!
Over the Colossus's head, a cloud of darkness formed like a cartoon dialogue bubble. Out of the shadows dropped a furry black monster dog, a hellhound. And astride his back was a young man with a glowing bronze sword. The weekend was here. Percy Jackson had arrived. Chapter 37
Hey, look, it's Percy.
Least he could do was help out. Taught him everything. I was too surprised to speak. Otherwise, I would have warned Percy what was about to happen. Hellhounds are not fond of heights. When startled, they respond in a predictable way. The moment Percy's faithful pet landed on top of the moving Colossus, she yelped and proceeded to wee-wee on said Colossus's head. The statue froze and looked up, no doubt wondering what was trickling down his imperial sideburns. Percy leaped heroically from his mount and slipped in hellhound pee. He nearly slid off the statue's brow.
What the... Mrs. O'Leary, jeez!
The hellhound bayed an apology. Austin flew our chariot to within shouting distance.
Percy!
The son of Poseidon frowned across at us.
All right, who unleashed the giant bronze guy?
Apollo, did you do this?
I am offended, I cried. I am only indirectly responsible for this. Also, I have a plan to fix it.
Oh, yeah? Percy glanced back at the destroyed dining pavilion.
How's that going?
With my usual level-headedness, I stayed focused on the greater good.
If you could please just keep this Colossus from stomping the camp's hearth, that would be helpful. I need a few more minutes to enchant this arrow.
I held up the talking arrow by mistake, then held up the bent arrow. Percy sighed.
Of course you do.
Mrs. O'Leary barked in alarm. The Colossus was raising his hand to swat the trespassing tinkler. Percy grabbed one of the crown's sunray spikes. He sliced it off at the base, then jabbed it into the Colossus's forehead. I doubted the Colossus could feel pain, but it staggered, apparently surprised to suddenly have grown a unicorn horn. Percy sliced off another one.
Hey, ugly, he called down. You don't need all these pointy things, do you? I'm going to take one to the beach. Mrs. O'Leary, Fetch!
Percy tossed the spike like a javelin. The hellhound barked excitedly. She leaped off the Colossus's head, vaporized into shadow, and reappeared on the ground, bounding after her new bronze stick. Percy raised his eyebrows at me.
Well? Start enchanting!
He jumped from the statue's head to its shoulder. Then he leaped to the shaft of the rudder and slid down it like a fire pole all the way to the ground. If I had been at my usual level of godly athletic skill, I could have done something like that in my sleep, of course. But I had to admit, Percy Jackson was moderately impressive.
Hey, Bronze Bud! He yelled again. Come get me!
The Colossus obliged, slowly turning and following Percy toward the beach. I began to chant, invoking my old powers as the god of plagues. This time, the words came to me. I didn't know why. Perhaps Percy's arrival had given me new faith. Perhaps I simply didn't think about it too much. I found that thinking often interferes with doing. It's one of those lessons that gods learn early in their careers. I felt an itchy sensation of sickness curling from my fingers and into the projectile. I spoke of my own awesomeness, and the various horrible diseases I had visited upon wicked populations in the past, because, well, I'm awesome. I could feel the magic taking hold. Despite the arrow of Dodona whispering to me like an annoying Elizabethan stagehand,
"Sayest thou, plaguey, plaguey, plaguey!"
Below, more demigods joined the parade to the beach. They ran ahead of the Colossus, jeering at him, throwing things and calling him Bronze Butt. They made jokes about his new horn. They laughed at the hellhound pee trickling down his face. Normally, I have zero tolerance for bullying, especially when the victim looks like me. But since the Colossus was 10 stories tall and destroying their camp, I suppose the camper's rudeness was understandable. I finished chanting. Odious green mist now wreathed the arrow. It smelled faintly of fast food deep fryers, a good sign that it carried some sort of horrible malady.
I'm ready, I told Austin. Get me next to its ear. You got it.
Austin turned to say something else, and a wisp of green fog passed under his nose. His eyes watered. His nose swelled and began to run. He scrunched up his face and sneezed so hard he collapsed. He lay on the floor of the chariot, groaning and twitching.
My boy!
I wanted to grab his shoulders and check on him. But since I had an arrow in each hand, that was inadvisable.
Fie! Too strong is thy plague!
The Dodona arrow hummed with annoyance.
Thy chanting sucketh!
Oh, no, 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 I said. Kayla, be careful. Don't breathe.
Achoo!
Kayla crumpled next to her brother.
What have I done?
I wailed.
Methinks thou hast blown it, said the Dodona arrow,
my source of infinite wisdom.
More ore, high. Takest thou the reins?
Why?
You would think a god who drove a chariot on a daily basis would not need to ask such a question. In my defense, I was distraught about my children lying half-conscious at my feet. I didn't consider that no one was driving. Without anyone at the reins, the Pegasi panicked. To avoid running into the huge bronze Colossus directly in their path, they dove toward the earth. Somehow I managed to react appropriately. 3 cheers for reacting appropriately. I thrust both arrows into my quiver, grabbed the reins, and managed to level our descent, just enough to prevent a crash landing. We bounced off a dune and swerved to a stop in front of Chiron and a group of demigods. Our entrance might have looked dramatic if the centrifugal force hadn't thrown Kayla, Austin, and me from the chariot. Did I mention I was grateful for soft sand? The Pegasi took off, dragging the battered chariot into the sky and leaving us stranded. Chiron galloped to our side, a cluster of demigods in his wake.
Percy Jackson ran toward us from the surf while Mrs. O'Leary kept the Colossus occupied with a game of keep away. I doubt that would hold the statue's interest very long. Once he realized there was a group of targets right behind him, just perfect for stomping. "The plague arrow is ready," I announced. "We need to shoot it into the Colossus's ear." My audience did not seem to take this as good news. Then I realized my chariot was gone. My bow was still in the chariot, and Kayla and Austin were quite obviously infected with whatever disease I had conjured up.
"Are they contagious?" Cecil asked.
"No," I said. "Well, probably not. It's the fumes from the arrow." Everyone backed away from me.
"Cecil," Karen said, "you and Harley take Kayla and Austin to the Apollo cabin for healing."
"But they are the Apollo cabin," Harley complained. "Besides, my flamethrower."
"You can play with your flamethrower later," Karen promised. "Run along. There's a good boy. The rest of you, do what you can to keep the Colossus at the water's edge. Percy and I will assist Apollo."
Karen said the word assist as if it meant slap upside the head with extreme prejudice. Once the crowd had dispersed, Karen gave me his bow.
"Make the shot."
I stared at the massive composite recursive, which probably had a draw weight of 100 pounds.
"This is meant for the strength of a centaur, not a teen mortal."
"You created the arrow," he said. "Only you can shoot it without succumbing to the disease. Only you can hit such a target."
"From here? It's impossible. Where is that flying boy? Jason Grace?"
Percy wiped the sweat and sand from his neck.
"We're fresh out of flying boys, and all the Pegasi have stampeded." "Perhaps if we got some harpies and some kite string," I said.
"Apollo," Chiron said, "you must do this. You are the lord of archery and illness."
"I'm not lord of anything," I wailed. "I'm a stupid, ugly, mortal teenager. I'm nobody."
The self-pity just came pouring out. I thought for sure the earth would split in two when I called myself a nobody. The cosmos would stop turning. Percy and Chiron would rush to reassure me. None of that happened. Percy and Chiron just stared at me grimly. Percy put his hand on my shoulder.
"You're Apollo. We need you. You can do this. Besides, if you don't, I will personally throw you off the top of the Empire State Building." This was exactly the pep talk I needed. Just the sort of thing Zeus used to say to me before my soccer matches. I squared my shoulders. "Right. We'll try to draw him into the water," Percy said. "I've got the advantage there. Good luck." Percy accepted Chiron's hand and leaped onto the centaur's back. Together they galloped into the surf, Percy waving his sword and calling out various bronze-butt-themed insults to the Colossus. I ran down the beach until I had a line of sight on the statue's left ear. Looking up at that regal profile, I did not see Nero. I saw myself. A monument to my own conceit. Nero's pride was no more than a reflection of mine. I was the bigger fool. I was exactly the sort of person who would construct a 100-foot-tall naked statue of myself in my front yard. I pulled the plague arrow from my quiver and knocked it in the bowstring. The demigods were getting very good at scattering. They continued to harry the Colossus from both sides while Percy and Chiron galloped through the tide, Mrs. O'Leary romping at their heels with her new bronze stick. "Yo, ugly!" Percy shouted. "Over here!"
The Colossus's next step displaced several tons of salt water and made a crater large enough to swallow a pickup truck. The arrow of Dodona rattled in my quiver.
"Release thy breath," he advised, droppeth thy shoulder.
I have shot a bow before, I grumbled.
Mindeth thy right elbow,
the arrow said. Shut up.
And tellest not thine arrow to shut up.
I drew the bow. My muscles burned as if boiling water was being poured over my shoulders. The plague arrow did not make me pass out, but its fumes were disorienting. The warp of the shaft made my calculations impossible. The wind was against me. The arc of the shot would be much too high. Yet I aimed, exhaled, and released the bowstring. The arrow twirled as it rocketed upward, losing force and drifting too far to the right. My heart sank. Surely the curse of the River Styx would deny me any chance at success. Just as the projectile reached its apex and was about to fall back to earth, a gust of wind caught it. Perhaps Zephyros looking kindly on my pitiful attempt. The arrow sailed into the Colossus's ear canal and rattled in his head with a clink, clink, clink like a pachinko machine. The Colossus halted. He stared at the horizon as if confused. He looked at the sky and arched his back and lurched forward, making a sound like a tornado ripping off the roof of a warehouse. Because his face had no other open orifices, the pressure of his sneeze forced geysers of motor oil out his ears, spraying the dunes with environmentally unfriendly sludge. Sherman, Julia, and Alice stumbled over to me, covered head to toe with sand and oil.
"I appreciate you freeing Miranda and Ellis," Sherman snarled. "But I'm going to kill you later for taking my chariot. What did you do to that Colossus? What kind of plague makes you sneeze?"
"I'm afraid I summoned a rather benign illness. I believe I have given the Colossus a case of hay fever."
"You know that horrible pause when you're waiting for someone to sneeze?"
The statue arched his back again, and everyone on the beach cringed in anticipation. The Colossus inhaled several cubic acres of air through his ear canals, preparing for his next blast. I imagined the nightmare scenarios. The Colossus would ear-sneeze Percy Jackson into Connecticut, never to be seen again. The Colossus would clear his head and then stomp all of us flat. Hay fever could make a person cranky. I knew this because I invented hay fever. Still, I had never intended it to be a killing affliction. I certainly never anticipated facing the wrath of a towering metal automaton with extreme seasonal allergies. I cursed my short-sightedness. I cursed my mortality. What I had not considered was the damage our demigods had already done to the Colossus's metal joints. In particular, his neck. The Colossus rocked forward with a mighty shoo! I flinched, and almost missed the moment of truth when the statue's head achieved first stage separation from his body. It hurtled over Long Island Sound, the face spinning in and out of view. It hit the water with a mighty whoosh and bobbed for a moment. Then the air blooped out of its neck hole, and the gorgeous, regal visage of yours truly sank beneath the waves. The statue's decapitated body tilted and swayed. If it had fallen backward, it might have crushed even more of the camp. Instead, it toppled forward. Percy yelped a curse that would have made any Phoenician sailor proud. Chiron and he raced sideways to avoid being crushed, while Mrs. O'Leary wisely dissolved into shadows. The Colossus hit the water, sending 40-foot tidal waves to port and starboard. I had never before seen a centaur hang hooves on a tubular crest, but Chiron acquitted himself well. The roar of the statue's fall finally stopped echoing off the hills. Next to me, Alice Miyazawa whistled. "Well, that de-escalated quickly." Sherman Yang asked in a voice of childlike wonder,
"What the Hades just happened?"
"I believe,"
I said.
The Colossus sneezed his head off.
Chapter 38. After the sneezing, healing peeps, parsing limericks. Worst God Award? Me. The plague spread. That was the price of our victory. A massive outbreak of hay fever. By nightfall, most of the campers were dizzy, groggy, and heavily congested. Though I was pleased that none of them sneezed their heads off, because we were running low on bandages and duct tape. Will Solace and I spent the evening caring for the wounded. Will took the lead, which was fine with me. I was exhausted. Mostly, I splinted arms, distributed cold medicine and tissues, and tried to keep Harley from stealing the infirmary's entire supply of smiley face stickers, which he plastered all over his flamethrower. I was grateful for the distraction, since it kept me from thinking too much about the day's painful events. Sherman Yang graciously agreed not to kill Nico for tossing him out of his chariot, or me for damaging it, though I had the feeling the son of Ares was keeping his options open for later. Chiron provided healing poultices for the most extreme cases of hay fever. This included Chiara Benvenuti, whose good luck had, for once, abandoned her. Strangely enough, Damian White got sick right after he learned that Chiara was sick. The two had cots next to each other in the infirmary, which I found a little suspicious, even though they kept sniping at each other whenever they knew they were being watched. Percy Jackson spent several hours recruiting whales and hippocampi to help him haul away the Colossus. He decided it would be easiest to tow it underwater to Poseidon's palace, where it could be repurposed as garden statuary. I was not sure how I felt about that. I imagined Poseidon would replace the statue's gorgeous face with his own weathered, bearded mien. Still, I wanted the Colossus gone, and I doubted it would have fit in the camp's recycling bins. Thanks to Will's healing and a hot dinner, the demigods I had rescued from the woods quickly got back to full strength. Paolo claimed it was because he waved a Brazilian flag bandana over them, and I was not about to argue. As for the camp itself, the damage might have been much worse. The canoe dock could be rebuilt. The Colossus's footstep craters could be repurposed as convenient foxholes or koi ponds. The dining pavilion was a total loss, but Nyssa and Harley were confident that Annabeth Chase could redesign the place next time she was here. With luck, it would be rebuilt in time for the summer. The only other major damage was to the Demeter cabin. I had not realized it during the battle, but the Colossus had managed to step on it before turning around for the beach. In retrospect, its path of destruction appeared almost purposeful, as if the automaton had waded ashore, stomped cabin 4, and headed back out to sea. Given what had happened with Meg McCaffrey, I had a hard time not seeing this as a bad omen. Miranda Gardner and Billy Ng were given temporary bunks in the Hermes cabin. But for a long time that night, they sat stunned among the smashed ruins, as daisies popped up all around them from the cold winter ground. Despite my exhaustion, I slept fitfully. I did not mind Kayla and Austin's constant sneezing or Will's gentle snoring. I did not even mind the hyacinths blooming in the windowsill, filling the room with their melancholy perfume. But I could not stop thinking of the dryads raising their arms to the flames in the woods, and about Nero and Meg. The arrow of Dodona stayed silent, hanging in my quiver on the wall. But I suspected it would have more annoying Shakespearean advice soon. I did not relish what it might telleth me about my future. At sunrise, I rose quietly, took my bow and quiver and combat ukulele, and hiked to the summit of Half-Blood Hill. The guardian dragon Peleus did not recognize me. When I came too close to the golden fleece, he hissed, so I had to sit some distance away at the foot of the Athena Parthenos. I didn't mind not being recognized. At the moment, I did not want to be Apollo. All the destruction I saw below me,
It was my fault. I had been blind.